Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour. Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. It's an educational service of public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour, an editorial review, brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on identity theft when we come back. And let me ask you this, what's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's obvious that something very wrong is going on with the Ten Commandments because they have been banned from our public schools, public institutions, and our national consciousness. Instead of these ten simple, time-tested laws, we now see the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place. And they're teaching the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto now in our schools, our public institutions. We've made them a part of our national psyche. Now, this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the last 50 years, don't you think? Are you aware that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but she can have an abortion? An abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent. That's why I contend that the solution to this moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. Our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments, and they even put 22 principles of that law into our Constitution. And there's one school left in America that still teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the benefits for their observance. Every law has a penalty, and you don't have to know what that penalty is to suffer its effects. So whether you call that the Mosaic Law, the law of God, common law, natural law, karma, or something else, it's automatic. It works just like AIDS or herpes or VD, which just happen to be the natural penalties for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package? That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free of charge. You can call and order yours right now. The number's 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to the website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request for your free General Law CD package. That's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. Bernard Lazier, a Jewish fellow, made this observation in a book that he wrote back in 1967. It's called Anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism, Its History and Causes, translated by Britain's Publishing Company, London, 1967. On page 158, here's what he said. He said the Jew is not content merely to destroy Christianity, but he preaches the gospel of Judaism. He not only assails the Catholic or the Protestant faith, but he incites to unbelief and then imposes on those whose faith he has undermined his own conception of the world, of morality, and of life. He is engaged in his historic mission, the annihilation of the Christian religion, the religion of Christ. So like Herod, the Jew has a hereditary hatred for Christ and Christianity, and this is clearly expressed in the Talmud and many other Jewish works. And despite this fact, the organized church, the church world, cannot or will not acknowledge that the decline of their Christian nation is proportional to the number and the influence of the Jews that are allowed to exist in it and to control it. So let's take a look at anti-Semitism, because it's like being politically incorrect. You don't want to say anything about gays because it's politically incorrect. You don't want to talk about blacks or Hispanics. You don't want to talk about the border or illegal immigration because it's unpleasant. It's unpleasant. We don't want to talk about politics and religion and those unpleasant subjects. But these unpleasant subjects over here threaten the destruction of your nation. Now, when Germany was destroyed in 1945, that was a pretty bitter pill to swallow. And fortunately for the Germans, they went into national captivity among their own kind. You know, we Americans treated them pretty well. You know, for being a conquered nation and being the vanquished, you know, we didn't treat them too bad. The Japanese, had they won the war, wouldn't have treated Americans anywhere near as benevolently as we treated them. You can rest assured of that fact. Just by taking a look at what the Chinese and the Japanese went through in World War II and how the Japanese treated the Chinese when they conquered them. And they're the same Oriental race. Now, anti-Semitism is a word that is used. It's fairly recent. It was coined back about the turn of the century. But it's a word used by Jews to brand anyone who speaks about them as being some kind of a wicked, evil fellow. And people, especially in the press, people are sensitive to that. And they're especially sensitive to the word anti-Jew or anti-Semite. I'm neither. But whenever I do a program and I mention race, which is one of the topics that we talk about, race and religion and the Bible and God and politics and so on, I'll always get a few letters that say, not too many, but a few letters that say, you know, you're crazy, you're nuts, you're anti-Semitic. I haven't told you what my viewpoint is on Jews and Semitism yet. I've been reporting to you what other people say, and primarily in this book, what the Jews say about themselves in their own books. That's what I've been reporting to you. This fellow, Bernard Lazier, who just made this comment that I reported to you, is a Jew. That's not George Gordon's opinion. I'm a reporter. I'm reporting that this is what this Jew said about the Jews. They're pretty honest, open, and candid. I gave you a report one time on the Rosenthal interview. Rosenthal, who was the administrative assistant to a New York senator, was very, very open and very candid. He said, you know, we've already taken over. We just haven't announced to you yet that we're the victors and you're the vanquished. He wasn't lying, and he wasn't exaggerating. He was just telling it like it was. And I agree with him. The Jews have taken over. They're in control of the political apparatus of the United States, both political, economic, and judicial. They're in control. Now, the term anti-Semitism has been used by the Jews to counter and conceal God's natural order and plan in the world, an order which has assigned or has been assigned to the Jew the role of aggressor, hater, destroyer, seducer, invader, and corrupter. By simply calling their opponents anti-Semitic, the Jews attempt to put all blame for conflict on the other party. In other words, it's those Arabs or Palestinians, it's those Germans that are the haters and the aggressors, when in fact, it's the Jew. Writing in the American Hebrew, James H. Holmes made this observation. He said, it can hardly be an accident that antagonism directed against the Jews is to be found pretty much everywhere in the world where Jews and non-Jews are associated. And as the Jews are the common element of the situation, it would seem probable that the cause will be found in the Jew rather than in the widely varying groups which feel the brunt of this antagonism. Cited from The International Jew, the Dearborn Publishing Company, 1920, Volume 4, page 222. The result of this name-calling tactic is to focus the attention on the effect of the conflict rather than on the cause of the conflict. Now, the cause of conflict is always some obnoxious trait of the Jew that precipitates conflict and action against the Jew. The Jews then say that it is anti-Semitism or it is unwarranted Jew hatred. Yet the hatred or the action against the Jew is a natural response. Writing under the chapter title of Jew Hatred as a Natural Instinct, Samuel Roth states, quote, anti-Semitism, Jew hatred is what they call it. Anti-Semitism is so instinctive that it may quite simply be called one of the primal instincts of mankind, one of the important instincts by which the race helps to preserve itself against total destruction. I cannot emphasize the matter too strongly. Anti-Semitism is not, as Jews have tried to make the world believe, an active prejudice. It is, rather, a deeply hidden instinct with which every man is born. He remains unconscious of it, as of all other instincts of self-preservation, until something happens to trigger it. Just as when something flies in the direction of your eyes, the eyelids close instantly and of their own accord. So swiftly and so surely is the instinct of anti-Semitism awakened in man, there is not a single instance when the Jews have not fully deserved the bitter fruit of the fury of their persecutors. Now that's note number 25, Samuel Roth, Jews Must Live, published in 1934, page 64. Now this guy, Samuel Roth, is a Jew. Don't write me a letter now and say, hey, Gordon, you're anti-Semitic. I'm quoting from a Jewish writer who wrote in a book that here's his observations of the term anti-Semitism and the reactions that the Jews receive. Now, I'm not suggesting now that the Palestinians over there don't deserve some of what they're getting. You know, once you get involved in conflict over here, both sides start to act like animals. And it's pretty hard at that point to ever go back to where you can trust each other again. If the Jew would change his ways, and I'm not even suggesting that all Jews are this way, it's just a predominant trait of a group of people who are trained out of a book called the Talmud, and they act that way because they're trained to act that way. And over the last 100 years, we've observed a moral decline here in America, a moral decline. The final solution that Adolf Hitler had advocated was, let's just kill them all. The final solution, that was Hitler's final solution, we'll just kill them all. The president of Iran, I can't pronounce his name, but you'll see him. He's in the news about once a week. He said the final solution is we just annihilate those Jews. We just erase Israel from the map. Let me tell you what the final solution is from the Bible. The final solution is, vengeance is mine, saith the Eternal, I will repay. You may rest assured that the God of Abraham is going to tune them up. The final solution is obey God, keep His commandments. Sit down, shut up, and fold your hands. Butt out. Americans have a problem. They just got to have their nose in everybody else's business. If we Americans could just butt out of the Middle East conflict, it would settle itself. And you can rest assured, God Almighty will settle the score. But we Americans can't, and so we've butted in. And I pointed out to you that everybody that messes with Jerusalem, everybody, without exception, I'll give you the citation again. It's in Zechariah 12, verse 3. It's the Bible quote on Jerusalem. It's going to be a burden. And everybody's going to be cut to pieces that messes with it. So if the Americans want to mess with it, they'll be cut to pieces. Everybody has a duty to obey God and keep His commandments. I have the same duty to keep my hands off your wife that you have to keep your hands off of my wife. And so do the Chinese and the Japanese and the Arabs and the Jews and everybody else. Everybody has that same duty. Now the Jews, to the best of my knowledge, I have never heard of a single case where a Jew came up to some white Anglo-Saxon Christian, stuck a gun in his face, and said, sign this mortgage contract or I'll kill you. I've never heard of that. I have never heard of a Jew coming into somebody's house, pointing a gun at them and telling them, you turn on that pornography, I'm going to pervert you, I want you to watch sex, filth, and perversion. I haven't heard of that. We make those choices because they're available to be made. You go down to the bank and you take out a loan and you voluntarily pay usury and interest. You know that interest and usury are prohibited in the Bible. And yet you're probably a Christian. You go to church. You have probably got a card on file with the church deacon called the building fund in which you agreed that you would pay the usury and interest on the church debt. You, the members of the church, went to the bank and borrowed the money to build your church or to make the renovations on it, and you agreed that you'd pay for that. Can you point to the Jew that put you into that position? You know, if you can't say no to evil, which is the purpose for having this conflict to start with, when God put this program together, He put conflict into the equation so that you'd have something to fight against. The Apostle Paul made that observation. He said, boys and girls, we're not wrestling against flesh and blood. We are wrestling against principalities and powers, supernatural powers. You are wrestling against Satan the devil, who uses the Jews, the communists, and the whole host and plethora of other wicked, evil people around the world to see whether or not they can pervert you and influence you into becoming just as wicked, evil, and perverted as they are. That's why I said, now, the final solution was given by God Himself. Now, if you want the benefits that God offers, there's benefits. And here's what you've got to do to get them. And if you want benefits that come from Social Security and Medicare and the United States government and so on, well, then go over there and get them. But you need to understand that there's a cause and effect relationship here and that you're not getting a free lunch. You're going to pay the piper at some point in time. Now, calling people anti-Semitic is simply a tactic that is used by this group of people over here to shut everybody else up. That's why you have this hate legislation. Now, I don't know about your country, wherever you live around the world, but in Germany and in Canada, they've got this anti-Holocaust legislation. They've got hate laws on the books. In fact, we've got some hate laws on the books here. Who is it that's trying to shut you up? Who's trying to throttle free speech? I'm all in favor of free speech. If you don't like what you're hearing here on the radio, all you got to do is turn it off. If you don't like what you hear, if you think that there's something that I'm telling you here that's untrue, that's incorrect, why don't you research it out and then send me the corrected version? Why don't you say, hey, Gordon, you're wrong about anti-Semitism. Let me give you a quotation here. I cited this quotation, you know, from Jesse H. Holmes, and I said that came out of the Dearborn Publishing Company, the International Jew, published in 1920, volume 4, page 222. If you got a bitch with what I just told you, why don't you go look that up and see if I lied to you? If you think I misquoted Mr. Roth over here, why don't you go to your public library and look up this book, Samuel Roth. He wrote a book called Jews Must Live, published in 1934. On page 64, you see if that statement that I cited to you on anti-Semitism is true and correct or not. Okay, if it is, then sit down and shut up. If it isn't, write me an email and tell me, hey, Gordon, you got your head up the wrong end, you made a mistake, and I want to fix it. Now, the Jew, like Esau, has revolted against God's order, and all are justified to act against the Jew in this regard. Thus, it would seem as if the grievance of the anti-Semite were well-founded. The Jewish spirit is essentially a revolutionary spirit, and consciously or otherwise, the Jew is a revolutionist. So said Bernard Lazier, Anti-Semitism, Its History and Causes, page 149. Hey, listen, that's another Jewish fellow. He wrote a book. And some white guy over here picked it up and said, gee, did you guys know that this is what the Jews are saying about you? You 70 million evangelical Christians over there that are promoting Israel and promoting Judaism around the world, pay attention, because when this thing comes back and bites you in the butt, it'll be nobody's fault but your own. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just giving you the information. You can make your own decisions as to what you think you ought to do. But every time that I see somebody trying to shut up some other antagonist, I say to myself, there's something wrong there with the guy who's trying to enact this hate legislation. For instance, let's take this Holocaust story, you know, that's going on. They call them Holocaust deniers. And they want legislation. They want to put you in prison if you deny that the Holocaust occurred in Germany during World War II. Okay. Let's assume that what they're saying is true. And let's suppose, for the sake of our discussion, that the Holocaust deniers are in fact liars and that they are telling you a perverted part or a perverted story of history. Let me ask you a question. If that's untrue and it should be punished because it's false, then shouldn't we punish all false speech? Every time somebody publishes something that's false, like Dan Rather, he came on the air during the last election and he said something false about President Bush, shouldn't he then be jailed for that false statement or that false belief? Shouldn't we put people in prison because they believe that the world is flat rather than round? You know, the people that belong to the Flat Earth Society, and they've got an organization here in the United States called the Flat Earth Society. I don't subscribe to it. I think it's kind of bizarre. I think it's kind of funny. Maybe people actually believe the world is flat. What do I care? How does that affect me? Why would I want to put these people in prison or punish them because they believe a lie? Shouldn't we put all Catholics in prison because they believe a lie? Or maybe the Protestants are the ones that are the liars and the Catholics are the ones that have the truth, and shouldn't we lock up all the Protestants? I mean, come on, guys. Free speech in our system of government has always been preserved. And the guy that's lying, the best thing you can do is expose his lies. That's what I'm inviting you to do here. If I'm lying to you, expose me. Expose me. Just go research it out and say, wait a minute, this isn't true. Here's the truth. And then send it to me. Publish it. Get on the air and say, hey, that guy Gordon's a damn liar. And I'm going to expose it. Now, I'm reading from a book here called, I'm going to give you the name and address again. Who is Esau Edom? Last week I covered Israel's tribes today. When I cover this Israel, and sometimes people write me a nasty letter and say, you're one of them damn British Israelites. I don't know. I don't belong to any organization called British Israel or British Israelites. I don't belong to any churches or organizations. I hold certain beliefs, and maybe my beliefs coincide with somebody else's beliefs. I don't know. Maybe. But I gave you the names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence. That's what the courts require. You know, when we go into court and we're going to make an argument, the judge sits there and he says, all right, Gordon, open your mouth and say something intelligent. Lay it on me. And I've got to stand there in front of the judge, and when I open my mouth, what comes out has to make sense. I've got to have names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence to prove my case. If I come in there bellyaching about hearsay and I think and my opinion is, the judge is going to shut me up and throw me out. And my complaint about many of these letters that I get from listeners is that they're not paying attention. And I guess I got a thin skin, or I'm wearing my feelings on my coat sleeve. But when I get a letter in here that doesn't have any names, any dates, any places, any facts, any witnesses, doesn't have any evidence, and this guy's spouting off about how dumb I am, I say to myself, you know, I'm not sure that this guy's in touch with reality. So I like to point this out in advance. You may have some legitimate criticisms. And once in a while I get a letter and somebody has some legitimate criticisms, and then I can appreciate that. Hey, listen, you may have a good point there. You may even be right. Now, what we actually have in the world is Esau, who is the hater and the aggressor, trying to conceal from the world his identity and innate attributes. That's the identity theft that I'm talking about. If Esau's true identity and traits become publicly known, he would once again be powerless in the world. The Jews have inherited these attributes of Esau and frantically tried to silence anyone who would reveal them. Silence anybody. Well, you know, if you're trying to silence somebody, I'm not trying to silence any Jew. I'm inviting anybody. Open your mouth. Speak up. Let's hear what you've got to say. But when you open your mouth and you say something, let's hear something intelligent. Let's get some facts out here. Get your citations in order. This anti-Semitic charge, along with the hate laws, is a tool that the Jews are using to, in their defense in this offensive, this hostile, revolutionary, and anti-Christian nature. If it can be insinuated that one charged with anti-Semitism is the hater and the aggressor, an emotional response of the masses can be directed against that individual, forcing him into either silence or loss of status in society, or in business, or in politics. And this is why personages in the media are afraid to take on the subject of Jewry, or here's what's going on in the entertainment media, or evolutionary philosophy, and so on. It's because it's politically incorrect. And if I open my mouth, I'm going to be branded one way or the other. And so we like to shut up. Well, how can you understand? How can you have understanding unless we have dialogue, unless we talk about it? Now, ever since the Jews invented the libel charge of anti-Semitism back in the 1880s, now the word anti-Semitism was first printed in 1880. So says the Jewish Encyclopedia, Volume 1, published in 1901 on page 641. Go check it out for yourself. Ever since the Jews invented the libel charge of anti-Semitism in the 1880s, it's been built up with Jewish money, organizations, propaganda, and lies. For example, the Holocaust. So that now the word is like snake venom, which paralyzes one's nervous system. Even the mention of the word Jew is shunned unless used in a most favorable and positive context. For example, being God's chosen people. This stigma exists even with conservative and right-wing individuals and organizations. They speak of world problems and conflicts and wars as being caused by the communists or the Zionists or by those international bankers or the CFR or the Trilateral Commission. Even though there is clear evidence that Jews are behind all of these movements and organizations, the Jewish connection is avoided like bubonic plague. The end result, then, is that those who fear being labeled anti-Semitic will never be effective in exposing the root of the problems in the land. No such fear existed in Jesus Christ, who boldly spoke against the Talmudic Pharisees face-to-face, right up front, in public gatherings. And he specifically pointed out their characteristics, stating that they were hypocrites. He said they were a generation of vipers. He said they were full of dead men's bones and of all uncleanness, blind guides of the blind. He said they were a wicked and adulterous generation. He said they were full of iniquity. He called them serpents. He called them murderers. And he said, you are of your father, the devil. Right, now let me throw out another challenge to you. You show me one good word that Jesus Christ of Nazareth had for a Jew. One. Send me one. I can show you 15 or 20 just in the Gospels alone. Never had a good word for him. Now, that doesn't mean that Jews have to be that way. There's a lot of nice guys out there. You know this Senator Lieberman from Connecticut? Hell of a nice guy. Hell of a nice guy. At least he is in public. He ran for vice president, if you'll remember, here a few years back with Vice President Al Gore. And I used to have a fellow work for me one time. He was a Jewish fellow. He was our company controller. Hell of a nice guy. I don't know what his religion was or what his politics were. Never got into it with him, but he was a great guy, nice guy. And some of my best friends are Jews. You ever heard that old adage? Some of my best friends are black. But that doesn't change the fact that in international geopolitics, doesn't change the fact that in the Bible, it doesn't change the fact that in history, throughout the ages, the Jews as a group, as a race of people, have been hated, persecuted, and despised. And the answer to the question is, why is that? Is it the fault of the Germans? Is it the fault of the Arabs? Is it the fault of the Muslims? I mean, come on, guys. What causes this antagonism? You don't see the Arabs hating the Chinese. You don't find the Germans in opposition and great antagonism against the Japanese and so on. I mean, come on, there's got to be cause and effect. The Jews have been cast out of every country in Europe. Every single country in Europe over the past 1,000 years has at one time or another expelled the Jews from their borders. So now what are you going to do? Blame the Romanians, the Hungarians, the Poles, the Russians, the Czechs, and the English and the French and everybody else? Huh? You're going to blame them all. It's all their fault. It's not the Jews. It's all those dirty anti-Semitic Europeans. Huh? Huh? It's those dirty, rotten, no good Arabs. Huh? Come on, boys and girls, it's time to grow up. Smell the coffee, wouldn't you say? All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on a compact disc. All of these schools that I just mentioned to you are available on compact disc for adult home study. For more information, go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log schedule and archives. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. The endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications so endorsed or recommended will reciprocate. Most of the authors and publications that we cite on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call the law school direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about Esau Edom, the identity theft. This one group of people has stolen the identity of an entire nation of people. And the entire nation of people that they stole the identity from threw it away. They threw it away. So don't get mad at the Jews now, the rest of you real Jews out there. Don't get mad at the Edomites now for coming along and stealing your Sabbath. You threw your Sabbath day away. You told your God to stick it where there's no daylight, and he knew where he could put it. And so these guys were smart enough to come along and steal your Sabbath from you, take your identifying sign, and now they're called the chosen people, and you serve them. Well, you know, you're the proximate cause of your own injury. Let me give you a couple of pointers here. I said the final solution to the Jewish problem is very simple, very straightforward. Doesn't take a hell of a lot of effort either. If you will obey God and keep his commandments, you will have no Jewish problem. If those Germans in Germany in the 1920s and 30s who were complaining about the Jews had obeyed God and kept his commandments, if Martin Luther had taught his followers to obey God and keep his commandments and stop practicing the practices of the Jews, those illegal, unlawful, sinful, wicked, evil practices, all of their problems would disappear. But they don't. You see, people want to practice paper money, but they don't want the penalties that come from it. They want to practice whoredoms, and they want to go to Flo's Whorehouse, but they don't want to get AIDS, herpes, and VD. Boys and girls, you can't have it both ways. You got a choice to make. Now, let me show you something here. In Mark 10, verse 30, there's a statement in here. Oftentimes, people will say to me, you know, this religion thing over here doesn't have much to offer. Oh, I disagree. I disagree. I think the Bible has a lot to offer, and I'm not so sure about religion. I'm not here to promote somebody's religion, either Judaism or Christianity. I wouldn't push Christianity very far. Christians are criminals. Christians are criminals. Let me show you that. Remember I showed you a little earlier here that sin is the transgression of the law? Sin is crime. And, you know, if you just use it in modern language, sin is crime. Now, let's take a look at Christmas. Did you know that Christmas, we just finished it, right? Christmas is a violation of the law of God. It violates Jeremiah 10, verses 1 through 6. Christmas is a crime. And the people down in New Orleans who just had their property destroyed by Hurricane Katrina are busily down there working hard to celebrate Christmas. And I heard the other day they're going to do Mardi Gras. Okay. Looked like to me that Christmas and Mardi Gras was the cause of Hurricane Katrina. That's my opinion. And now you guys are going to go give the finger to the God of Abraham again and say, we will have Mardi Gras and we're going to practice Christmas. Okay. Then you eat pork. That's a violation of Leviticus 11, verse 7. You practice Easter. That's a violation of Jeremiah 44, verses 17 through 19. You practice integration and segregation, in place of segregation, rather, integration and miscegenation as public policy. That's a violation of Genesis 11, verses 1 through 9. You practice interracial marriage in violation of Deuteronomy 7, 1 through 11, Ezra 10, 10. You practice unjust weights and balances through your Federal Reserve and your paper money in violation of Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. You practice witchcraft every Halloween in violation of Leviticus 20, verse 27. You have legalized sodomy, abortion, adultery, and usury in violation of sodomy, Leviticus 20, verse 13, abortion, Leviticus 20, verses 1 through 5, adultery, Exodus 20, 14, and usury, Exodus 22, 25 through 27. Now that's 11 crimes. I can sit here and cite 82 criminal activities that violate the Bible, violate the law of God, that we practice routinely in the United States of America. Out of 133 laws, we Americans violate 82 of them. Now that's the bad news. Now the good news is we still practice 51. That's right. Of the 133 laws of God, we practice 51 and violate 82. Now, who taught us to violate these 82 laws? Where did we learn how to do that? And why would we want to? Why would you want to eat pork? Well, it tastes good, but it causes trichinosis and 55 other diseases. Why would you want to eat pork and get those diseases? Because it tastes good? Okay, well, I'm not going to sit here and preach a sermon. You people can do what you want. But if you were to stop breaking those laws, listen to this. Mark 10, verse 30. Peter began to say to him, this is in verse 28, he says, "Lo, we've left all and we followed you." So Peter, saying to Jesus, says, hey, boss, we left our fishing boats, we left our wives and families, and we came and followed you. Verse 29, Jesus answered and he said, "Well, truly I say to you, Peter, there is no man that has left his house or his brethren or his sisters or his father or mother or wife or children or lands for my sake and the gospel's, but he shall receive a hundredfold now in this time, houses and brethren and sisters and mothers and children and lands with persecutions in the world to come, eternal life." Got that? That's 100 times. Let me explain it to you in legal terms. Let's suppose for the sake of our discussion here, you were to stop practicing Christmas, integration, pork, Easter, interracial marriage, unjust weights, witchcraft, sodomy, abortion, adultery, and usury. Let's suppose you gave up all of the fun that you're having in life, and you obeyed God and kept his commandments and withheld your foot from those criminal activities. God said, I will, if you suffer any loss from doing that, I'll pay you 100 times your loss. 100 times your loss, I'll pay you. In this time, before you die, you don't have to wait until you die and come up in the resurrection or go to heaven to be with Jesus or whatever you believe. I'll pay you 100 times right now. I was in hopes that I would lose $10,000 in the transition so that I could collect a million. I've never collected my 10,000, and I never collected the million. I never lost a dime doing this. It does not cost you any money to obey God and keep his commandments. Well, at least it didn't cost me anything. Now, in Exodus 23:20, you know, a lot of times people say, oh, I'm kind of scared of them Jews over there because they're kind of bad guys. Sometimes people say, aren't you afraid that B'nai B'rith or the Anti-Defamation League is going to come down on you? No, not at all. Not at all. Number one, I'm not a Jew. Number two, I'm not a Christian. I'm just going to stay out of the fight. Let's go to Exodus 23, verse 20. Let me tell you a little story over here. Story time. Exodus 23:20. God tells us a little story here. He says, behold, I send an angel before you to keep you in the way and to bring you into the place that I've prepared. Now beware of him. Who? The angel. Beware of this angel. Obey his voice. Don't provoke him. Don't give this angel the finger, because he's not going to pardon your transgressions because my name is in him. But if you shall indeed obey his voice and do all that I speak, then I will be an enemy to your enemies and an adversary to your adversaries. For my angel shall go before you and bring you in unto the Amorites, Hittites, Perizzites, Canaanites, Hivites, and Jebusites, and I'll cut them off. And you shall not bow down to their gods, nor serve them, nor do after their works. You know, if you just say, no, I'm not going to do after your works, I'm not going to sign your mortgages, I'm not going to use your Federal Reserve notes, I'm not going to use your credit cards or your banks, I'm not going to sign up for your dirty, filthy TV programs either. I think I reported this to you not too long ago here, that something like 70% of Americans subscribe to, or maybe more than that, 70% anyway, subscribe to this satellite TV. And the satellite TV has about, I don't know, 50, 100, well, it's 40 channels here where I live. And I was over here talking to a guy who was selling these satellite systems and said I could get 40 or 50 channels for $40 a month. And I said, does that include the pornography channels that go with it? And he, with a glint in his eyes, says, oh, yeah, all the good channels. You get them all. I said, oh. Yeah, that's what I was afraid of. I said, no, I don't think I want to buy it. I do not want to pay money to have that filth and perversion brought into my home. But I'll tell you what I'll do. I would like to buy the History Channel and Discovery. Can you sell me just those two? Oh, gosh, no. No, we can't sell you just two channels. We've got to sell you all 40 or 44 channels, which include all the good channels. I said, yeah, I know. You got all the good channels on there. Now, I want to remind you of this, boys and girls. 65% of Americans go to church every Sunday. 65%. And 70% of Americans subscribe to the pornography channels and pay money to have it brought into their homes. Under the guise, of course, that, well, you know, if you want history and discovery, you got to take the bad with the good, or the good with the bad, however you want to word it. The other day I heard a little story. Somebody said, well, they're going to sort out, they proposed it in Congress, they're going to sort out channels so that consumers could buy just those channels that they wanted. And the media industry said, no, there are blockers on there. And we want to sell all of those channels to you. You got to take all of those pornography channels. I was in a motel one night, and I was flipping through the channels, and I got onto one of those pornography channels, and I'm telling you, boys and girls, I have never met a longshoreman in my life. I have never been in a whorehouse and saw such filth and perversion as I saw on that channel on television in a motel room. Blew my mind. I decided right then I didn't need that in my home for me or for my wife or for my children or anybody else. 70% of Americans subscribe to that. So I'd share that with you. And I remember in Luke 6, verse 46, Jesus made this observation. He said, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say? How come you go to church every Sunday and call me Lord and pray to Jesus and don't do a damn thing I tell you? Now, in Isaiah chapter 58, there's a unique promise. You want to make some money, this is where the money's to be made. So if you're a mercenary here and you want to make some bread, flip over here to Isaiah chapter 58. Give me a minute because, no, I'm not a real preacher here, so it takes me a minute to find it. Isaiah 58 starts in verse 13. Now, listen to this. You want to make some money? Here's where the money's at. He says, if you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and you call the Sabbath a delight, the holy of the eternal, honorable, and if you honor me, not doing your own ways, nor finding your own pleasure, nor speaking your own words, then shall you delight yourself in the eternal, and I will cause you to ride upon the high places of the earth, I will feed you with the heritage of Jacob your father, for the mouth of the Eternal has spoken it. The heritage of our father Jacob. You know, he was filthy rich. Did you know that? He had a couple of nickels to rub together, and he had a little money. And God said, I will feed you with the heritage of your father Jacob. Now, if you just practice one law, just that one, just the Sabbath. Now, the Jews have lost their national identity, and they have had their uncle Esau come in and usurp their identity and their inheritance. And Uncle Esau did not do that by force and violence and spoiled nobody. And that's because all of the Jews threw their inheritance away. And Uncle Esau came along and saw that thrown in the scrap pile and said, geez, I think I'll pick that up and make some money with it. And boy, has he been making money. I never saw a poor Jew in my life, have you? 70% of them all go to college. All right, so there's that part of the story. Now, because of Christ's exposure of the traits and the ways of these Talmudic Jews, they could not easily continue in their ungodly practices. So these Jews thus sought to kill him in John 8, verse 37 and John 8, 40, and they eventually succeeded in killing him. In today's thought-controlled world, Jesus Christ would be considered a hater and an anti-Semite. This is clear, for the Jews have made it known that the New Testament is the most anti-Semitic book ever written. Did you know that? The Jews say that the New Testament is the most anti-Semitic book ever written. Oh, I wouldn't go that far as to say it was the most, but, you know, it's right up there with some of them. The key, if the Jew is to live in Christian society, his true nature and attributes must be concealed and censored from the masses. Thus, the Jew states that throughout history, he has been the one persecuted. And yet the cause of that persecution is the anti-Christian and offensive Jewish traits. That part of the story is never told. And when these traits are concealed, the cause and nature of much of the problems, the conflicts, the conspiracies, and the wars in the world are also concealed. Speaking on these problems, Henry Ford said, remember Henry Ford? You know, the guy that invented the Ford car? Well, half the confusion which men meet in their efforts to account for the world is due to their ignorance of just where is the Jew. He is always a key. But if the key be disguised as something else, then how can it be used? The International Jew, Dearborn Publishing Company, 1921, Volume 2, page 245. Now here we now have the key as to the origin and the source for so much of the conflict and the friction that is now so prevalent in the world. Two of the main characters acting on stage in the world's international geopolitics, the Christians and the Edomites, Jacob and Esau, have two diametrically opposed and opposite value systems and spiritual dispositions, and the twain shall never meet. To quote the Jew, Marie Samuel said, I suspected from the first dawning of Jewish self-consciousness that between you Gentiles and us Jews lies an unbridgeable gulf. You know, the average American Christian, he says, oh, we got to get along with the Jews and we got to be just friends with everybody. What naive dunderheads. It'll come back and bite them in the ass in the end. Those Jews over there are taking over the world, and they're going to succeed. So if you Jews are sitting out there saying, well, that damn Gordon over there is against us. I'm not against you. You've already got control, and you're going to succeed for 1 hour. And then comes an ass-kicking like you people ain't never seen before. So it's time for you to wake up also. But primarily, the Christians are the ones that need to wake up, pay attention, smell the coffee, and get their act cleaned up. Because if you don't, well, then there's a natural penalty that comes from your disobedience. Kind of reminds me of those guys I told you about up in Pennsylvania. They voted the whole school board out for bringing up the subject matter of intelligent design. Okay, you guys, you boys up there in Pennsylvania, pay attention now. A Hurricane Katrina or something like it. You know, we don't get many hurricanes up there in Pennsylvania, but some great natural disaster, some earthquake or something's going to happen up there, and it'll cause billions of dollars of damage, and everybody will be crying and weeping and wailing and gnashing their teeth and praying to Jesus, and, oh, God, why did you do this? And your preachers will say, well, God's ways are so high, we just can't understand why God has allowed this to happen to us. It's because you gave him the finger and told him to kiss off. That's why he did it to you. Now go down there and take a look at New Orleans and the Gulf Coast. You gave him the finger and told him to kiss off. You practice witchcraft. You practice every pagan abomination. And then when he kicks you in the ass, you weep and you wail and you cry and you weep and moan. Oh, Jesus. It makes me want to puke. The Jews, being an offshoot or an extraction of Esau, Edom, have a deep-seated hatred for God's people, the white Israelite people, and their God. Edom's role in the script calls for this hatred to be acted out in the world. They cannot and will not deviate from their role. And, you know, it's like the story of the lions. You know, lions are nice, neat animals. And they run out there and they grab little baby zebras and they kill them and eat them. And it isn't because they're mean, it's because that's what lions do. I was watching some crocodiles in the river. I don't know what river it was now, but anyway, the wildebeest are coming down to the river and swimming across, and the crocodiles grab them, take them down, drown them, and eat them. They're just doing what crocodiles do. Jews are just doing what Jews do. God himself set the stage. choreographed the play, you had to have something to fight against. You had to have something that would tempt you. And so they come along and they tempt you with Flo's Whorehouse. Can you say no? They tempt you with Federal Reserve notes and easy money and loans. Can you say no? We're going to use gold and silver. We're going to use just weights and balances. Americans can't say no. I don't know about you Australians and New Zealanders. You know, maybe some of you guys could wake up down there and say, you know, I think I'll tell these guys to kiss off and go back and obey God and keep his commandments. I know it's a wild new concept, but mull it over a little bit. I'm about out of time. Let me give you a reminder or two here. This book is written by Charles A. Wiseman. Remember the address. I don't know if this address is good or not. You can write him a letter if you want to, or you can go to your local bookstore. In case you didn't know this, if you just go down to your local used bookstore, they're hooked up with all the bookstores in the world online. And you give them this name. You tell them you're looking for the book, Who is Esau Edom? By Charles A. Wiseman. And they'll plug that into their computer. And some used bookstore in Long Beach, California, or Miami, Florida, or Chicago, Illinois, or somewhere in between will have that book. And they'll say, well, the book's in pretty good condition or whatever, and it's $5 or whatever. And all you got to do is just pay the guy right there on the spot, and he'll order it, and they'll ship the book into you. Or you might try writing to Wiseman Publications. They may still be in operation. I've had this book for a long time. It was first published back in 1991, so here we are 15 years later. Is this address still good? I don't know. It's 11751 West River Hills Drive. You got that? Wiseman Publications, 11751 West River Hills Drive, number 107D, Burnsville, Minnesota. 55337, printed in the United States of America. There's a couple three things in here I didn't agree with. I saw them as biblical errors, but by and large, the book is pretty good. I didn't cite those sections that I disagreed with. What I've had time to review, I've shared with you, and you can take it and go from there. How's that for a plan? On the face of the cover over here, they've got a picture of a number of very prominent Jews like Jacob Schiff, Henry Kissinger, David Ben-Gurion, Karl Marx, Mayor Rothschild, Sigmund Freud, and Henry Morgenthau Jr., former Secretary of the Treasury of the United States. Pretty important, pretty impressive people. And the Esau Edomites are pretty important and pretty impressive people. People you might want to avoid. You certainly don't want to do what they do or follow their example, but pretty impressive people. All right, with that, I'm going to have to cut it off. We'll see you next time with a new topic. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States. We're also heard 7 days a week worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to our homeschooling page. Time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.